Do we want to do a Rabbi Sablowski thing? Do we have Shailas yet? It's our own list. But now, I guess now we can talk about ovens and microwaves and vaping and smelling and smoking. I would imagine Rabbi Sablowski is a big fan of smoking vaping. I probably going to get great stuff. By the way, there was a cheshbin in that answer. What? It wasn't a statement about kashrus as much as it was about, you know, other musim. Okay, so let's go back. So we've discussed Recha, we've discussed Zeya, so now we have to talk about how that applies. So we spoke about how it applies to an oven. Now let's talk about how it applies to a microwave. The factors in a microwave are very, very different than the factors when it comes to an oven. This is before we even move on to Sifim Gimel Dalet Hei Vav Zayin, which will hopefully cover most of that today as well. But just to, you know, still in the sugya of the Recha and the Zeya and the way it works in ovens. So the factors in a microwave are different. A microwave, in a certain sense, is more chomer than an oven, and in a certain sense is more kal than an oven. I mean, there are certain factors that there are arrows that point in both directions when it comes to a microwave. Yerach HaShulchan writes, as we've seen, that Zeya is only a problem in a very small, confined space. So our ovens are normally large enough to avoid the problem of Zeya, according to the Yerach HaShulchan. And again, that's debatable. Shitos had a view how big our ovens are, but microwave ovens, you definitely don't have that as a tzad lahatla. Like the size of the oven is so big that you're going to avoid the problem of Zeya. You can easily see in a microwave oven that that it fills with steam. Things steam up very, very quickly, and that's the second reason to perhaps be more machmir on a microwave. It's just the very nature of the way food gets heated in a microwave is that microwave ovens heat up the liquid molecules within the food first, and that causes everything to become very steamy, and that warms up the rest of the food. So it's way, way more zeya that you'll have in a microwave than you'll have in an oven. Yeah, and again, you'll see it. Remember a motion that Chupa said, you know, just look, see if there's zeya there. So on moist things, he didn't trust you to just look. But on something dry, he said, if you see that there's zeya, so then there's zeya. And if you don't see the zeya, then you don't need to be choshish for zeya. So in the microwave, you'll almost always see that there's zeya. So with the microwave, when something gets really hot, you'll almost always see that there's zeya in the microwave. So in the microwave, you have more of a chashash of zeya. Furthermore, when it comes to an oven, since the environment of the oven is very, very hot, an oven is turned on to 350 degrees, there's fire in the oven, so when something spills or something, if there's a minor splatter or a spill, it's almost always burnt up immediately, unless it's a major spill, where it like puddles at the bottom of the oven. But something very minor will burn up immediately, and certainly zeya, one could argue, gets burnt up very, very quickly in an oven. Microwaves aren't hot. They're not, meaning they heat up the food, but the actual inside of the microwave isn't hot. So whatever spills just stays there until you clean it up. So it will just sit there. And that's obviously going to cause a major concern, forget about Zeya, a major concern of Recha, because then the next time you put something in the microwave, it's being put in simultaneous to the food that's spilled on the glass plate of the microwave. So you're simultaneously cooking two things, and oftentimes that might be, if you have one microwave, obviously what we're talking about over here is not putting tray food in a microwave, although that's a shaila that comes up a lot, also using a microwave that's been previously used for tray, because people go to hotels and there's a microwave in the hotel room, people work in offices, and while they usually don't have an oven in the office, right, but they do have a microwave usually in the office. So usually you have to think about, when we learned about ovens, we said you probably don't have to think much about non-kosher food when it comes to an oven. but because in our kitchens we typically don't deal with non-kosher foods so much. Microwaves, half the shilas are about non-kosher foods. So it's, yes, you have to worry about non-kosher food, you also have to worry about milk inflation if you're only going to have one microwave in your house. Or should you, can you, have only one microwave in your house? When you're setting up a kosher kitchen, probably one of the things that we have to think about. So normally, reicha is only a problem if it's two things that are in the oven simultaneously without being covered. So that can happen in a microwave because of the spilling that happens in a microwave. So again, three reasons to point the arrow l'chumra when it comes to a microwave. Two zeyah related and one reicha related. Number one, zeyah related is that it's a very small space. Number two, zeyah related is that the way it heats things creates more zeyah. It's just the nature of a microwave. And number three, reicha related is that when something spills, it's unlikely to burn up. It doesn't burn up, and it's still going to be there unless you clean it up. It's still going to be there next time you put food in, and then it's going to be cooking something simultaneously. Now, there's also reasons to be more mekil.
If it's not going to burn up because the microwave doesn't get hot, then why would it be considered cooking at the same time if it's not getting hot?
What was it?
The spill on the floor. It's not. We assume that it doesn't burn up because the microwave doesn't get hot. So why would it be considered cooking at the same time?
Because the food will get hot. I mean, next time you turn on the microwave. For some milk spill, and now I'm putting some meat in the microwave, the milk is going to heat up, and that's going to have all sorts of zeya, and the meat, at the same time, the meat is going to heat up. So there are also svaras to be more makel by a microwave. Number one is what we just said as far as the heat is concerned, meaning, generally speaking, when there's no heat, there's no transference of tam, unless you have the sakin, the dabr charif, you know, those kinds of things, or kavush, or whatever. But over here, since the inside of a microwave is not hot, one could argue that where there are going to be any glios, if there's no heat. So the natural response to that, and that's probably what you meant, right? The natural response to that is that, the steam is very, very hot. So if the steam is hot, even though if you were to be inside the microwave, while it's on, you were to order. Not go with that imagery. If you were to put a thermometer somehow on the wall of the microwave while the microwave is on, it would not measure as being hot, right? So the walls of the microwave are not hot, the air in the microwave is not hot, but the steam coming from the food is hot. So that might be mavliya into the wall, but then you get into the issue of how hot the steam has to be in order to be melted on the wall, and how hot is the steam by the time it gets from the food to the roof of the microwave or to the walls of the microwave. Remember that Ramah about hanging the pots or the dishes over the steam, that by the time it rises to a certain level, we assume the steam has already cooled down and it's not going to be mavliya into the walls. So certainly as far as the blios in the walls, one could argue the fact that it's that the environment is a cold environment would make it that there's not going to be any blios in the defados. So this is a machlokas among the two of the giants of halacha and technology. Halacha and technology in Israel, there are two major players in the space of halacha and technology. Right? There's Somet, and then what's the other one called? There's another one. I forgot what the other one was called. One was headed by Rosen. I think that was Somet. And the other one was Rav Levi Yitzchak Halpern, I think, was the other one. So the two, those two disagreed with each other. Those two rabbanim, who were both involved in halakha and technology, disagreed with each other on this very issue, that Rav Halpern said, you'll never have a blia in a microwave because the steam is never hot enough to generate a blia. I mean, the fact that you have 8 inches between the top of the food and the ceiling of the microwave, so once you're that high above, the steam is below Yatzoledes, whereas Rav Rosen was concerned that the steam is plenty hot. This, of course, is the reason, because steam can cool off so quickly, that's the reason we do not generally encourage people to kasher using steam, unless you know what you're doing. Because if you're going to kasher a countertop, let's say for Pesach, using steam, and you don't know what you're doing, so you stand at a distance and you spray the steam onto the countertop. Yeah, by the time the steam is a few inches out of the nozzle of the steamer, it's already cold. It's already not going to be so hot. So that's obviously not going to be effective in kashering a countertop or a sink or something like that. You really need to know what you're doing to make sure that you're holding, A, that you have a powerful steamer that's actually very, very hot, and B, that it's that you're holding it close enough to the surface that you're trying to kasher, because that's the nature of steam, is that it cools off very quickly. But anyway, that's at least a one arrow in the direction of being more makel by a microwave. That is that because it's cold, it could be that the steam is never hot enough to be mavliya into the defunos. Another arrow in the direction of kula, although I will acknowledge that this is a very weak arrow. This is not something that I would be super comfortable with as a... it's difficult to even call it a snif lahakel. Bernard Sablowski likes to mention it as a snif lahakel, so we will mention it as well. We've already learned when it comes to the Isra of Bishul Basul Chalav, and when it came to the Isra of Bishul B'Shabbos, that there is a, and when it comes to Bishul Akum, we will learn that there's a major discussion whether Bishul in a microwave constitutes halachic Bishul. Meaning, whenever there's a din related to Bishul, so is, this was, the, as we mentioned, the old machlokas between the Dunkin' Donuts in the Five Towns and the Dunkin' Donuts in, I think it was Elizabeth. Those are the first two kosher Dunkin' Donuts, and they had a machlokas whether it's Bishul Akum when they make the eggs for you, and the Nachri makes the eggs for you in the microwave. Rav Shlomo Zalman said, this is, if it doesn't use a normal heat source, so it's considered an unconventional method of cooking, and is therefore not Bishul. Rav Moshe in the Tshuva dated Tafshin Lamed Aleph, which is roughly 1971, which is way, way early on in the microwave, the development of microwaves and the usage of microwaves. And I think that's important. Again, we discussed this, we're not going to get into it now, but I think it is important that Rav Moshe wrote the Tshuva before anyone was actually using microwave. I think I may have mentioned to you that I remember as a child when we, I know it makes me sound very old, but I remember when we got our microwave, like it was like a big deal, like that we were able to heat things up so quickly without having to heat up the oven and things like that. So like I was born in 1977. And I remember, it's not like this happened in 1978. I mean, I am a super genius, obviously, but I didn't remember things from when I was one year old. So it must have been like, I don't know, 1986 or so, we got our microwave. And, we were among the last people to get new cool stuff, but like, not, we weren't so far behind. Yeah, I lived in Five Towns, and we weren't like so far behind. So I remember getting, so Rav Moshe wrote this tshuva 15 years before the Leibowitzes and Lawrence had a microwave. It's important, whatever. Okay, so Rav Moshe, it's important because he makes assumptions about how it's going to be used, about once everyone has it, what they're going to do with the microwave. But bottom line is, he says that it's very normal to cook in a microwave, and as soon as everyone has it, they're going to use it more than they use a regular oven, and they're going to cook dinner every single night in the microwave, because why wouldn't you? If you can zap something in a minute, and you can get the same results. So of course they're going to do it, and of course it's a normal way of cooking, and therefore it constitutes halachic bishul. That is a very important focus when it comes to bishul akum. Whether it's a violation of Bishul Akum. Now, the majority of Rishonim, the large majority of Rishonim, assume that the parameters of Bishul are irrelevant to the parameters of Bliya, meaning just because something is not technically Derech Bishul or a normal way of Bishul or a Halach constitutes Bishul, does not mean that it's not going to be Mavliya. Mavliya relates to how hot it is. But there is a minority shita that when one does not do an act of Bishul, then that's not going to be Mavliya either. That in order to be Mavliya from one thing to the other, it needs to be Bishul. So if you were to follow that view in Rishonim, and you were to accept Rav Shlomo Zalman that microwaves are called Bishul, that microwave cooking is not called Bishul, so one might suggest you're home free with the microwave. You don't have to worry about anything. Because even if it's really hot and the steam is really hot and everything, it doesn't matter because it's not the normal way to be bashal. It's not the normal way to be bashal. It's not called bishul. And it's not called bishul. It's not called the bliya. So Rabbi Sablowski, like I said, doesn't say, okay, no, it's fine. Everything's okay because of this. But he says that maybe you could be mitzarifit as a snif lahakel together with other considerations. If you look at Rabbi Forst's Kashrus book, Kashrus Sefer, the red one, Rabbi Forst, he raises the issue on page 233, and he completely rejects even using it as a sniff lahakel. One has nothing to do with the other. We don't paskin that way, and therefore, whatever your kulas are going to be by a microwave, it's got to be a different kula. That can't be it. That can't be even part of the equation. Okay, so now that we have all of that, and we see the arrows pointing in whatever directions they're pointing to, what does that tell us about using a microwave lahalacha? So we have to take each concern on its own, right? There are basically three concerns. There's a concern that something will spill and then you have a reicha problem. There's a concern that something splattered and there will be a reicha problem, spill through than a splatter, as we'll see. And then there's a concern of the zeya in the microwave itself. So the most serious issue is a spill. A spill is more than a splatter. A spill means that it goes on the actual floor of the microwave, what we'll call, assuming that you have a glass plate. Not every microwave has that. Some is just a flat floor of the microwave. But on the bottom, you know, where you put the food. So stuff might spill on that. That's gravity makes it. That's the most likely place that the things are going to spill. So if meat juice, let's say, spills on the floor of the microwave, or let's say you use one of those old-fashioned paper plates to heat up your meat, and the meat looked like it was a solid, right? So you know, you were good. It wasn't gonna be liquidy. But you know, you forgot that gravy congeals, and as soon as it heats up, it's all gonna. So it goes right through the plate, and there's meat juice all over the floor of the microwave, and you don't do a good job cleaning it up afterwards because you look, and there's no one else in your family in the room at the time, and no one will know who made the mess in the microwave. So you quickly leave, and you don't do a good job cleaning up. That's not a suggestion that that's what you should do, especially for those people that are married. Just clean up after yourself. But if you don't, and then you cook a dairy on the same microwave, so then obviously it's gonna the meat is gonna get absorbed into whatever's sitting right above it. So certainly the best thing to do is to avoid having bleaks transfer from whatever's on the bottom surface of the microwave into whatever it is you're warming up in the microwave. How do you do that? How do you avoid having bleaks transfer? So you say, oh, I'll put a plate. Obviously, I'm not going to put the food directly in there. I'll put a plate. The plate's not good enough. Because why is it? Even if it's if the plate is not a paper plate, even if nothing's going to get through the plate, but bleos will get through the plate, meaning you have dairy and meat bleos going into the plate at the same time. So what you have to do is you have to have a second layer. Right, you need one layer on top of whatever is on the floor of the microwave, and then another layer below the food, because the bleach is not going to go clean below rotop. So you need to create a second layer, so that the bleach will the bleach from the meat that's on the bottom will stop at the first layer, and the bleach from the dairy that's on top will stop at the first layer. So that's as far as whatever's on the food of whatever's on the floor of the microwave. That's for spilling. What? Yeah.
There's only if you don't clean it up. Right?
Yeah. I'm saying these are the concerns, right? That something might spill if it's not cleaned up well, and maybe you're not examining carefully every time to see if there are drops on the floor of the microwave. But if you don't clean it up well, the microwaves can be messy. And again, this is one that's studded lahachmir, because in an oven that will rarely happen. Because a little spill will get burnt up right away in an oven. It would have to be a major spill not to get burnt up. But a microwave, even a very minor spill, is going to be sitting there, and you may not look for it. You may not notice it. The second concern is if food has splattered onto the wall of the microwave or remains, near where you're putting the food, but not directly touching the food. So a dairy food that's being cooked in the microwave. While there's meat splatters on the wall next to where the dairy food is cooking, will create a situation of reicha. Obviously, reicha is not going to be a problem with the eved. Maybe not so obvious in such a tiny space, according to the Rama. But reicha is not. Generally speaking, reicha is not going to be a problem. Right? What did the Rama say? When it came to Reicha, he was a little more machmir than the Mechaber was, like he always is. He writes, "Yesh Omrim in Matir Rechafu b'di'evad ken atan pasuach kasad tzas min atzad all the malum b'kum shashni yotze." So we have said we're not going to be machmir b'di'evad, but it seems l'chachila that if it's not a vented space, that you do have to worry about recha. I don't think microwaves have a venting system the way ovens do, because there's no smoke in the microwave, so it doesn't need to go out into a chimney or something. So that's why you can have a microwave in an office, in a dorm room. It's much easier to install a microwave. You just need to plug it in. And an oven, you need to be careful, make sure that there's proper ventilation for the smoke to cut down. So if you have a recha issue, that could be a real problem. How do you solve recha issues? So first of all, it's a problem, obviously, with chachila. It might even be a problem with the recha issue. So how do you solve the recha issue? So it's a very simple solution. You just cover something. Just cover up whatever you're cooking. Then you're not going to have to worry about recha. Again, covering the food that you're putting in the microwave is not going to help the first problem, the spilling problem, because the spilling problem is coming from underneath, right? But when it's coming from next to, and it's just in the same basic chamber, so then you may have a recha issue unless you cover the food. The third issue is a Zeya issue. And that is, even if your microwave is perfectly clean, nothing spilled, nothing splattered, you look inside, let's say you work in an office where they have a custodial staff that's really on top of things, and they go and they clean the kitchen several times a day, so you look at sparkling, the microwave sparkling. I can tell you, we do not have that on the sixth floor in Lod. There's one microwave, and it is not sparkling. So let's say you look inside the microwave, it's perfectly clean, but you still have to worry about Zaya, because if you cook dairy in a microwave, and the steam rises to the ceiling of the microwave, and so it gets nivlat into the walls or into the gag of the microwave, and then you cook meat, and again the steam rises, so there are blios all of milch in there already. And that raises the possibility that whatever droplets come back down into your food, as the whole thing fills with steam, is going to trafe up your food. Again, the issue of Zeya can be solved rather easily as well. How do you solve the issue of Zeya? You cover it. If you cover it, it's not going to generate too much Zeya. So it seems that if a person puts down a plate, an extra plate, underneath the plate that they're heating something up, and they cover all food in the microwave, l'chora, you should be covered. You should be fine. You could avoid kashrus problems. Covering, however, in a microwave is tricky. Why is it tricky? So the problem is that you'd want to cover something in a way that there's not going to be any recha, any zeya, any anything. So how do you do that? You make it airtight. You ever try to microwave something after you've covered something airtight? Like you put a Tupperware in with the cap on it, airtight. So you put it in for a minute. After about 30 seconds, you hear pop. And then you open up the microwave, the top is next to the soup that you were heating up. It's no longer there on the top. It's airtight. That's just the way you could, whatever the scientific explanation is for why it happens, right? Meaning the maisa. That's part of whatever the scientific way how microwave works, whatever. It happens. So this is something we've all seen. We know that the maisa happens. So the cover can't be airtight. That would be the worst kind of cover to put in a microwave, because you might as well just put it in uncovered. It's not going to last anyway. So what do? They sell microwave covers, right? For cleanliness purposes, I assume. They sell, meaning it's not just the Frum companies. Frum companies came up with a way to brand it where they make red ones for Fleischig and blue ones for Milchig and green ones for Baruch. And instead of $1.99 for each microwave cover, it's $12.99 for each microwave cover. Okay, Frum companies have it all figured out, right? Kosher innovations. We're good with this kind of thing. But they sell those anyway. Like in Bed Bath and Beyond, Allah Hashalom, they used to have you could buy them just clear plastic ones. So they always had holes in them somewhere. They have to have holes in them, otherwise they would just pop off. So the question is that enough? If you have a hole in it, L'chora, it does not need to be airtight. It needs to be secure enough that it's not going to fall off. A paper towel even wrapped around it, or another paper plate on top of the paper plate that you have in the microwave. L'chora stops the zeya, welding enough. Rabbi Belsky, Zichrono Livracha, recommended that you use a double covering to be extra sure that the recha and the zeya doesn't come through. Rabbi Belsky said that it can have holes in it because the steam will escape through the holes. But remember, the concern with the zeya is not just that it's going to come out. Fine, let it come out. The concern with the zeya is that it's then going to come back in. So he says, if you have small holes in whatever you're covering, in the food that you're covering in the microwave, so it'll allow some zeya to escape. And zeya is not going to land back in the food. It's not going to come back in the food. And also, in general, it serves the purpose of when it's largely covered, when it's mostly covered by one of those microwave covers, whatever zeya escapes is a much smaller amount of zeya, and I would imagine cools off much more quickly. So the likelihood of that zeya being hot when it hits the walls or the ceiling of the oven, of the microwave, are very, very slim. Meaning if you use one of those microwave covers and you take out your food and you take off the microwave cover, you'll see it's soaked, right? Because most of the zeya was caught by that microwave cover. So yeah, there are vents on the side where some zeya will be able to get out, but it's probably such an inconsequential amount of zeya that it's not going to affect anything.
If there are holes in the cover, shouldn't it still be bound for the
if there's mamash?
Yeah,
if there's mamash, it shouldn't be bound.
So Tupperware makes, they make like tops that have vents specifically for steam to escape. Would there be like a minor?
Well, all vents are for steam to escape so that it doesn't pop off. But
right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it helps with the, a mushroom of whatever's inside, but.
Yeah, I mean, again, most of the steam stays inside the top. That's the whole purpose of the top, is to keep the mess inside. But some escapes, because it has to, otherwise it would pop off.
Are you concerned with the videos from Zaya dropping down? Meaning, why do we need, I guess, like two covers on top?
Why do you need two covers?
Meaning, something possible, assuming there is possible follow on top of the microwave, if it drips down onto
the. Yeah, I don't think that really happens. I think the majority of whatever Zaya escapes is not going to be, if you cover everything. Whatever Zaya escapes is not going to be enough to affect the top of the microwave. It's certainly not going to be enough to then come back down onto the microwave cover and affect that. You can test it. You put a microwave cover on, you put something very liquidy or a very saucy meat, put it in for like 3 minutes, which is more time than people usually use a microwave. You'll take it out, and you'll see that the bottom of the microwave cover is soaking wet. The top is completely dry because it just doesn't go.
We only concerned about Zaya going to the top and back down. Can we just have it open on the side so you can cover the top hole?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. That's how they usually are. Sometimes they'll have some venting on the top, but usually the venting is like around the perimeter of the top, or it's off to the side.
When Rabbi was discussing the double barrier on the bottom, is that including the glass plate? Is that not including the glass plate?
Glass plate's not a barrier, that's where everything's going to land, right?
Glass plate and on top of a glass plate.
Yeah, so it's probably a good idea to have
another one in between.
Yeah, meaning if there's any spill, if you see that the glass plate is sparkly clean, then it's unnecessary.
So the spillage is only probably on the plate. But I mean, if there's a little bit of
spill.
Yeah,
if you're putting down a plate directly on the spill,
right?
Yeah, then you got to worry about that. But otherwise, if you see that it's perfectly clean, then you don't have to worry about that so much. Whatever. So what did Poskim actually say? Like halacha lemaisa. So Tshuvas Siach Nachum Simin Mem Ches. That's from Nachum Rabinovich. No? So he writes that it's totally mutter to use the same microwave as long as it's clean. But best to cover one of the foods, even if you don't, it's kosher anyway. Rabbi Abadi says something similar. His Tshuvas. It's all fine. Don't worry about any of it. Everything's cold. Everything's if you want to be from us, so you can cut one of the foods and then you'll earn your from meat points. In the Tshuvas Shraga Hamer Chelik Vav Simchus Samozayin, he'll say he's machmir that you have to have two microwaves. In the Shavuos Yitzchak, which is a contemporary sefer that quotes from contemporary poskim, he quotes that Rav Eliashiv thought that you shouldn't rely on these covers. They fall off. There are spills all the time. Too many problems come up in such a small confined area. Two microwaves, or just designate the microwave for either only fleishig or only milchig. Two microwaves. So it's a nice chumrah to have two microwaves. Asked Rav Shechter. Rav Shechter thought it's best to cover both types of food. It's best to cover milchig and to cover fleishig. And that way you don't have to, you know, even if one of those coverings wasn't perfectly effective at some point along the way, when you cover the next one, it will be safe as well. So the Ikra didn't absolutely require that you cover both types, probably not, but he thought that that's the best thing to do, to cover both inflations. I asked if you need a double cover, but Reb Belsky was going into the double cover in case one of them fell off or something like that. So Shachter didn't... you want to do a double cover, do a double cover. Okay, what if I don't want to? So don't. You know, like he wasn't engaging on that issue of whether you need a double cover or not. So that's as far as using a microwave. Yeah.
If you're designated microwave just for one area, you still need the double plate on both times.
If you're using for just no, meaning if you've only ever had meat there and it's kosher meat, right? Meaning not like an office microwave. You've only ever had, right? Sometimes in the office, it's from offices that have not non-Jews working, they'll have a meat microwave and a dairy microwave. So the guy will come and put the pork in the meat microwave. It doesn't really help so much. But if you have a kosher meat microwave, so then you don't have to worry so much about things that's still kosher meat.
Could you require your chef to use uncovered for, let's say, for meat and then double wrap the dairy?
Probably you could single wrap the dairy, but you know, just thought it would be best to cover everything, right? Meaning, as far as what would actually create a problem, as we've just gone through, like it's hard to create a problem when you're covering at least one gender of food. What's in Jeremy? In general, he's Rabbi Abadi's not a big believer in Zeh.
Right, so that even the trade food you
can. Yeah, he's not, right. In general, he's just not so concerned about Zeh at all, right? So he doesn't hold that Zeh is one of the Ikari. John.
So, what if someone wants to heat up food and keep it hard and doesn't want to buy a third microwave, then what's the right move?
I just cover everything. Everything's fine. They sell for it's $11.99 each one, but you know, probably for $30 you can get all three, the green, the blue, and the red. Kosher innovations. Yeah. Okay. Now, yeah.
Would it be possible to make all things and have to do
I mean, what's it? Yeah, absolutely. Arab Shabbos, or these, I don't know. When using microwave Arab Shabbos, like it's hard to imagine when that would come up. Now, very often what happens is you check into a hotel and there's a microwave there, and you want to be able to use it. Now, obviously, they don't have a dairy, you know, and a fleishig and kosher or whatever. Unless it's a kosher hotel. I mean, even then, people do whatever they want in their hotel. You know, like they could do whatever. So the generally accepted method of kashering the microwave, and I guess we could wait till we get to Hagadol Skel and do this, but once we're talking about microwaves, we might as well. Generally accepted opinion about kashering the microwave is kibolo kachfalto, and therefore, just like the flavor absorbed in a kli through steam, so there's a certain level of heat that steam is able to generate. So that same level of heat is what it takes to kasher it out. So since a microwave only ever absorbs through steam, you can kasher it through steam. That was always the accepted practice. That the way to kasher a microwave is you take a cup of water and you put it in the microwave for 5 minutes and the whole thing fills with steam, and it probably never got hotter than it did, than it does right then, because all the steam is going all over the microwave, and therefore that will kasher your microwave. That was always the accepted methodology of kashering a microwave. Rabbi Forst points out that it's true that most of the time glios in a microwave come through steam, but don't forget about the fact that sometimes food spills in a microwave. And when food spills in a microwave, that's irikli risha, meaning any sauce that comes up. You're taking the paper plate, and the whole paper plate like bends or whatever, or you tilt it back, and it's not paying attention, and sauce falls off, so that, and it's boiling hot. So that's irikli risha on the floor of the microwave. That's not going to be able to be kosher with steam. That you should have to do irikli risha, you should have to do an iroi, rather than just steam. So first of all, that assumption that you need an iroi rather than steam is not so partial. Meaning, if it was clear rishon, so then I hear, right? Then maybe steam is not good enough. Even that, it could be that hagala, that steam counts as hagala, would be good enough. But iroi, you know, you could argue that doing that steaming it is a valid form of kashering. Rabbi Forrest sort of leaves it as a tzarech iyun. How on earth people can kasher a microwave using just steam? What about all the iroi of the that's on the glass plate? So the OU, in the OU website, it says that it's filling up the water, the microwave with steam of water, kashers the walls and the ceilings of the microwave, but doesn't actually kasher the glass turntable. You have to assume that that has had direct contact with non-kosher food, and therefore you should, the OU website says, the glass plate should be wrapped in two layers of plastic wrap. What is two layers of plastic wrap do? So whatever is trapped under there, if there's any mamashas trapped under there, it's not going to escape two layers of plastic wrap. And if, even if there's no mamashas, there are blios, and you're concerned some of your food is going to also spill and also trip, so it won't get through the two layers of plastic wrap. B'chor, you don't really need two layers. You just need to make sure that that, meaning, if there's no mamashas and you see that it's clean, so you're only worried about blios. You're not worried about mamashas. So then a blio is only going to happen if you're not careful to make sure that none of your mamashas gets to the floor of the microwave. If some of your mamashas gets to the floor of the microwave and there are blios in the floor of the microwave, then you have a problem. But that's what the OU website recommends. Now, if you're going to rely on steam to kasher the floor of the microwave as well, which is typically what people do, so the ha'ara was made, I forget by who, but by many, I guess, that after you kasher it once, by heating up a cup of water for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it is, in the microwave, you should then move the cup of water over and repeat. Why? Because the spot where the cup was sitting did not get kosher the first time because no steam hit that spot. That was just the kli was covering that spot. So you should move it over and repeat. This is all by microwaves that only have a microwave function. There are microwaves, it's important to note this, even if you don't frequently use it this way, there are microwaves that have the possibility of a convection function, that you hit certain buttons and it turns into a regular oven. So once it turns into a regular oven, then you have to kasher like a regular oven, and that could be more challenging. If you've never ever used that feature, a lot of people don't even know they have that feature on their fancy high-end microwaves, but some of the fancier microwaves have that feature. If you've never used that feature, then you don't have to worry about it. It could be that even if you've used it on occasion, you don't have to worry about it. We'll save that for kasher and kelim later, and whether we go basar rov tashmisho or not. But certainly, if you never use it, you wouldn't have to worry about it. But just to be mindful of that possibility. What? To be mevata whatever went into shishim, probably not. You have to wait 24 hours since the blios went. Yeah, like any kasher, you got to wait 24 hours, so you're not going to need shishim. The question is, in a hotel room, can you assume stam kelim neim v'neyom? In a hotel room. So there are those that argue, absolutely not. You got to wait till 24 hours after you checked in. Now you have to assume 3 minutes before you checked into the hotel, there was someone there heating up their pork sandwich. Others would argue that usually they, there's a gap. You know, checkout time in the hotel is 11 a.m. Check-in time is 5 p.m. So why is that? Because they need time to clean up the room. And you're gonna see, do you have to assume that people were using the microwave that morning before they checked out? Yesh Ladin, whether something, in a commercial kitchen, you assume that things are constantly being used. In a factory setting, you assume things are constantly being used. in a hotel room, you assume it's constantly being used. I would bet that the majority of people that check in and out of a hotel room never even touched the microwave, never used it at all. Okay, so that the contemporary rabbanim debate that issue. How long do you need to wait before you catch a hotel microwave? Important to note, if you're this type of kashering is at best hagala. And important to know for chametz, we don't do hagala on Pesach. Any hagala that you do has to be done before Pesach. So sometimes people go on a chalamoi trip and they stay in some random one. Not talking about like when you go to a Pesach hotel where the assumption is that everything's kosher and that everything's taken care of and that everything is good. Whether those assumptions are good or not is not the time to discuss right now. But when you stop, you go on a trip with your family or whatever. I remember one time when my kids were young. The Yankees had a 3-game series in Baltimore, Chol Hamoed Pesach. Perfect. We drove to Baltimore, stayed in a hotel for 2 nights, went to all 3 games. Right, it was fantastic. Great time had by all. The microwave is a real. You can't use the microwave. You can't assume the microwave. You can't kasher the microwave. Whether you could use it with double, triple, or whatever coverings to try to be safe, okay, that the chametz, whether you would be comfortable doing that or not. But certainly you can't cash it with my Pesach. That comes up all the time. People are always traveling over there, going on trips or whatever, so they always want to know how to cash with things on Pesach. Nibun, you could do on Pesach. Nibun Chamer, you could do on Pesach, but you can't. Okay, we'll get to that when we get to cash with him. All right, let's move on. Yeah? Any other questions?
So why in the hotel? Why not just cover it? Why do you even kosher it?
Yeah. Do that too. For whatever reason, people are more comfortable with that.
Maybe you said that you have to kosher the muffin and cup twice. So you have to do it a second time?
Yeah, that's the horror that.
Is it in a glass plate?
Yeah.
So are you koshering the glass plate?
So the question is, so if it's plastic, so then not that what we said is correct. If it's glass, the question is, can it be koshered at all? Right? And the answer is for Ashkenazim, probably not. Right? So then you should probably make sure, unless you want to say, well, there's so many kulas as it is, and everything is just a chashash and this and that, so maybe you'll be somech. And plus, most Rishonim hold that it's not baleya, and so maybe you can be mitzvari for all the different shitas together. But probably the best thing when it's emphatically is to have another layer of something covering the glass.
And then you wouldn't need a second.
You put another plate down, you put a piece of cardboard, something like that. Make sure it's something that's microwave friendly. Don't line your microwave with foil. That's once in the dorm. Let's say my roommate took leftovers out of my fridge that was covered with foil and put it in the microwave to warm it up. That was not a pleasant evening in the dorm. Okay, on the whole floor.
From one heated up and threw away, but put it throughout the thing covered.
It's very rare that you have to. I don't think you're generally can't be too much with the other in the microwave. Meaning, someone says, I heated something in the microwave and the cover fell off, something like that. So they say, was it steaming, piping hot? So the answer is always no. No, it was 20 seconds into it and I realized that, 20 seconds in and then I forgot to cover it or something like that. I could see one big machin if you see that tamamish full of steam. But it depends what the history of the microwave is. Is it low? They're going to trade for microwave, I think that was my first time in Allah Hashir ever was on microwaves. Or one of the first, but definitely one of the first 5 to 10. The history of Tevin Halacha. The guys in the yeshiva at the time said there are things that yeshiva bachurim just don't know that every Jew should know. So I said what? They're how do you use a microwave in a hotel room? Every Jew should know that. Okay, so we'll give a share on that. So then they're that's the kind of thing we should know. So we started doing that. Day. We did another 10 minutes of things people should know. Now we got to a lot of stuff nobody really needs to know. But at the time, there was a lot of stuff that people really needed. Okay, so let's move on to Sifkim over here. Yeah, let's move on to Sifkim. We'll still have some time. Tosfos in Avot Zara Samachavim Beit says that if you have Shamnunis Shel Iser, a layer of Shamnunis of Iser on the thing that they take the matzahs out of, the matzah with the giant wooden spatula thing, what do they call it?
The
paddle. That's what they call it, the paddle. Okay, but that's what you call it. Okay. So, right, I was about to try it. So the paddle that they take the stuff out of the oven, right, in the matzah out of the oven with, so that you can't put heter on that all day. But once it's in Bas Yama, then it's going to be mutter. Even though they have Shamnun and Shalisar all over it, they use Asar oils to grease it up. So the Rashash, the Sechas Avodah Zara on the spot, says a raya from there that a very thin layer of something becomes Eina Ben Yama after 24 hours. And it's not only a bliya that becomes Eina Ben Yama after 24 hours. Apparently, Tosfos is assuming that even the Shamnunis, which isn't just a bliya, it's mamashos, but it's such a teeny tiny amount of layer of mamashos that also becomes Eina Ben Yama after 24 hours. The Shaf over here in Siv Katan Yotes, right? If you look at the Shulchan, Shulchan says, Yei Shamnunis Shalisir Al Hamarta Shekhomer Pala. Paddle. Also, you can't put heter on it all day. You could use it, because what else are you going to, you're stuck. So says the Shach, yeah, because you're stuck. Says the Shach, I don't understand. Normally we say that when goes right in Basyama to Basyama, Luchatila. So he says over here, the word goes right in Luchatila, keep it below Afshar. Because there's no other option over here. Why is there no other? What do you mean there's no other option? Don't use it. Sharia akum lo yishma lo lasos marda chadashim chopan shish pochaleshul isin. Because the guy who you rent the oven space from is not going to listen to you to make a different paddle every time a little bit of isin spills on the paddle. Which is an interesting, this is a mitzias of the way they used ovens. That it wasn't shy. It wasn't at all possible. So the whole heter, the chor, according to the Shach, is that the guy is not going to listen, the chor, that if it's owned by a Jew, it's in your own kitchen, it's owned by a Jew, then there is no heter, and that's where all the important point out. The chadish was tazayin, yonchashulchan, noschaf aleph, crazy, tazayin, they all point this out. Now, if you use the Marga Bas Yoma, the Isser V'Hefer writes that if you didn't wait the 24 hours, he writes, okay, so the first bread that you take out is Asr. But any bread you take out after that is going to be Mutter. And what if you take out one loaf of bread and then another, then another, then another, then you realize, hey, it was Bas Yoma, and it was smeared with Trefa Schmelt this morning. So the Isser V'Hefer writes that it made makiro chad betray batal avagav davroy l'skabe dein yisru migufo. That you're not going to say that it's chetichuri l'skabe because the isr is not really l'skabe. It's just a bliya of the isr in the loaf of bread. So since the isr is not right in l'skabe, it's going to be batal like yavish b'yavish chad betray, which is simen kotes, which we'll get to at some point. Then the Rama adds the kolzman shibas yom alo mahani ba'agala v'lo klip of b'kli umus. That you can't do agala. Why not? So says Shach Sivkat Machav. V'lo agala achrak. They put the marta dina kiklisha tashmish al yidei ur. They inspire Baruch Chaim some tofen and alves of dal sort of libun, because really it's something that requires libun. Because anything that's tashmish al yidei ur, anything that is used with fire, agala does not suffice. Thing is, you can't do libun on a paddle. Why can't you do libun on a paddle? Because libun is with fire, and you know what happens to wood when you burn a fire, it becomes the fuel for that fire, right? So you're not going to kasher wood, obviously, with fire. Someone was at my house yesterday. True story. someone was at my house yesterday. They told me that in their family, they said that we were talking about kashering steam before this. They said they were talking about kashering steam. And it was a wife of a Talmud. She said that her mother had called up Rabbi Kelmer Zatzal a number of years ago and asked Rabbi Kelmer whether they can kosher their granite countertops with steam. And Rabbi Kelmer said, absolutely not. So she said, why not? You're the only mean rabbi, all the others are planning with kosher with steam. And he said, because you come from a yichus of a particular type of that you come from, Munkach or whatever it is, whatever town in Europe you come from, and they have a tradition in your family that that they cover all countertops. That was always the tradition. And that, so regardless of what is mutter, not mutter, you have to follow the minhagim, and the minhagim of the place where you come from in Europe is you cover all countertops. So she said, yeah, all their countertops were wood. So they weren't, maybe if they had granite, you know, back in the Alter Ein, maybe they would have used steam and they would have captured. So she claimed, Rabbi Kelmer said, good point. I mean, that minute was probably because who had granite countertops in there? Like, that wasn't a thing. You couldn't get a stone countertop, right? Probably, yeah, you had a table. What was the table made out of? It was made out of wood. Okay, so you covered the table rather than trying to get in between all the cracks and whatever. So that's what they would do. So, that's the... but obviously, you wouldn't do liban on your wood countertop or your wood or anything else made out of wood. Okay, so that's Sif Gimel. Not much to say as far as I have in Sif Gimel. Sif Dal. So we've already pointed out the Gemara of Chazar Sabbatim Beis tells us that Hay Bas Tiha Ovid Chavim B'di Yisrael Shapidam Yisrael B'Dovid Chavim Is Machlokas Abayam Rasa Rabar Mutter Abayam Rasa Reichav Nilsihi. This machlok is about Recha. So the Gemara says that where does Rava get his idea that Recha is Lav Milsa? From a Mishnah Maseches Trumas about an oven that's heated with Truma, where the bread that's baked in the oven is Mutter Lazarim. That a non-coming is allowed to eat bread that was baked in the same oven with truma. Apparently, we're not worried about the reyach of the truma affecting the bread. So Meila Rava says, you see from there, reicha lav milsi. So the Gemara says, Abaye responds, that no, in the case of the oven, the truma is already destroyed and it's burned up by the time you bake the bread. Because the truma was the fuel for the fire that baked the bread. It wasn't, you weren't cooking a truma pie in the oven at the same time you were baking the bread. The truma was the fuel for the fire. So the Gemara goes on to say, kitanoi, and maybe it's subject to machlokas tanoim. I wrote the paskav of nasal pichavish al yayin shel truma. If you take hot bread off of an oven, they used to bake the bread by radias hapas, scraping off the dough that was, that was attached to the oven surface, not like we do. So they would, if you take that hot bread, that hot latha, off of the cylinder oven, and you put it over a barrel of yayin shel truma, Rav Meir Oser, Rav Yehuda Matir. Rav Yosef Matir b'shal titin v'osu b'shal so'orim, v'shal so'orim sho'avos. So you have three shitas. Oser, mutter, and depends. Right? Rav Meir says oser, Rav Yehuda says mutter, Rav Yosef says that it depends if it's wheat bread or barley bread. So it seems that Rav Meir holds reicha milsa, and Rav Yehuda holds reicha lav milsa. So Rava says, that's why I paskin reicha lav milsa. So Rav Yehuda, Allah, Rav Yehuda, I paskin like Rav Yehuda, reicha lav milsa. Abaye says, what are we talking about? This is not a machlokas tanaim. Because when you have paschama v'chavis m'sufa, you have an open barrel and you have hot bread on top of the barrel. So everyone agrees that the reach makes the bread asur. Because fundamentally, all tanaim really agree, reicha milsa, if it's strong enough, when you have pas sonenes v'chavis magufa, if you have cold bread and a sealed barrel, obviously there's no reach. According to everybody, the whole machlokas tanaim is pas chama v'chavis magufa or pas sonenes v'chavis m'sucha. And the question is, does reach transfer in those cases? But if reach did transfer, then reach in reicha milsa. So how does the reach get into the bread exactly? So the Torah writes, l'fisha kol letas min ha-reach harbe. The bread sort of is a magnet that draws in the reach, meaning the bread covers the entire opening. This is the lashon of the Shari Dura, as quoted in the Torah, that as well that ein lito se reach liyaminu small el derech hamagufa. That's the lashon of the Shari Dura in the morning. That it doesn't get at. There's no other escape for the reach than this little opening. So since that's the only escape for the reach, it's all going to go straight into the bread. And the implication is that wheat bread doesn't draw reach in quite as much as barley bread. But when the reach has nowhere to escape, it will go into the bread. And that's what the Ramah, that's the basis for the Ramah saying, v'tamer sasim l'gamri l'kulial no reicha milsa. Right? The Rama says that if it's a completely closed oven, then everyone's going to agree that it's Recha Milsa. Now, there is a discussion in the Rishonim why Rabbi Yossi is Mechalik between Paschit and Pasa'ot. So Rashi writes that fundamentally he agrees Recha Milsa. But wheat bread is just not showing the Recha. Barley bread sucks in more Recha. The Rif says in our Yossi holds Sa'orim draws in the Guf Hayak, not just the Recha. Because really Recha love Milsa. That Recha love Milsa. And the problem with Sa'orim is that it's not the Reach that's coming into the barley bread. It's the actual Guf Hadavar. It's the actual Isser. So the Prichadash asks on Rashi, he says, I understand. You're telling me that really fundamentally Recha Milsa. And it's just that Chitim doesn't draw in the Reach. Well, if Rabbi Yossi really holds Recha Milsa, the exception is not the Sa'orim. The Sa'orim is the rule. The Chitim is the exception. So it should have said, Rabbi Yossi Oser Mishal Sa'orim, Mata Mishal Chitim, Mipnei She'en and Shavlos. Meaning, instead of explaining, Rabbi Yossi explains why the Sa'orim is problematic. Well, that's the rule. You know, the Sa'orim is the standard, and the Chitim are the exception, because the Chitim don't draw on the Reach. He should have explained why the chitim is not problematic. So the lashon is off, says the Brichadosh Sivkat and Yurchet, according to Rashi. Also, the lashon of shoev sounds like it's more about mamashos than about reach. You'd use the lashon of klita or something like that about the reach. On the other hand, if you say like the Rif that it's about the actual lachluchis, how do we know that Rameir only says asur mitzad reach? Maybe he holds that it draws lachluchis and he just thinks that chitim also draws lachluchis. So either Shita and Rishonim, Luchora has their own problem. So the Shulchan Aruch says that Pascha Meshumunach Al Gavi Chavis Pesukah Shal Yayin Nesach Uyir Tzedali Asura. But if the bread is cold or the barrel is closed, then it's mutter. And then the Shulchan Aruch says, but Vimhay Pascha Orim Aser Ema Pascha Ma Afilu Chavis Magufa. That so it seems to follow Rabbi Yossi that the that he's mati b'shal chitin and the answer is b'shal sa'orim. The question that the poskim deal with is that Shulchan Aruch paskins b'diavad recha lav mitzah. So why is he going to assume over here that the bread is going to become usher through the recha? So I realize I'm over time. Let's just quickly give two approaches. Number one, Shach and Sifkat of Chaf Aleph says that the Rishonim say lo damu la'adad. What does that mean? So the Rosh Hashanah says the Gemara's discussion of bread over a barrel is bestama. It's not dependent on the machlokas about recha. Meaning, we're assuming like the Shitas HaTosfos and the Shitas HaRash that recha bepaschama bechavis psucha is more strict than recha through roasting or through baking in an oven. And that's why even the Ramos, Machmir about baking, is going to be mekel to have some ruba. Over here, it doesn't come up with any have some ruba. The Ramos, Aser, the Ramos, silent. No have some ruba kind of hectic. That this is a more potent form of recha. Prichadosh disagrees with the Shulchan Aruch over here entirely because of this. And he says, no, it's kosher b'diavad like any other recha. And the crazy and Sukkot Yuches, the Chachmasadim, Klal Samachdei, didn't test. Rely on this prechadash b'makom hafsim ruba, and Badei Shulchan thinks that's normative against the Shulchan Aruch. One case where poskim might be something on the prechadash is Stam Yena. Shulchan Aruch specifically said Yayin Nesef, which is Taraisa. Maybe Stam Yena, which is Rabbanan, we could be something on the prechadash. Okay, so that's Sif Dach. Next time, what I'd like to get through Sif Hei Vav and Zayin, we get into a lot of Levitic sugyas in terms of tobacco products that have chametz in them, tobacco products that maybe have kashrus issues, and ti'ima in general, tasting things and how that relates to toothpaste and other types of things. So we have what to discuss as Hashem next time, which is Wednesday.